Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Yes, we did. We started to burn many things we found. It's Harvey Wasserman back with the Solartopia of Green Power and Wellness Show for another scintillating hour of talk and journeys to a green-powered earth. Glad to have you with us today. We are on the air with a program again on nuclear power. We're going to be joined by Tom Clemens and Sarah Barzak. And Tom, you're on the air with us, Tom Clemens?
Yeah, I'm here, Harvey. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for calling us. And where are you?
I'm in Columbia, South Carolina, down at the Ground Zero for the nuclear fizzle that's going on.
All right. Well, Tom, we will reveal, by way of full disclosure to our guests, that you and I have known each other. You and I have known each other for many, many years, and at Greenpeace and in other, shall we say, venues of the anti-nuclear movement. And you are doing God's work down there in the deep, deep South. Doesn't get any deeper than South Carolina, that's for sure. Doing battle with the nuclear power industry. We're going to talk to you at great length today about three things, about Fukushima and about the nuclear loan program for the Vogtle nuclear plant, or Vogtle, I guess, as they call it down there, and to talk about the real serious problems with these so-called small reactors that thankfully don't exist yet, but the nuclear industry is trying to foist off on the American public. Does that sound like a fun hour to you?
Sounds like a full hour, definitely, Harvey.
All right. We're also we're expecting a call in from Nick, who's going to talk to us about the upcoming events around Fukushima. First, though, when he does, we'll let him on. I think Sarah Barzak is going to join us. Is that correct?
Yeah, Sarah may already be calling in, and she was communicated with her just a few minutes ago. I know she was going to call in, Harvey.
Okay, very good. So, Tom, let's start. Fukushima, I have just posted an article, I guess, it was, for lack of a better word at this point in time, an interview with a doctor in Tokyo who is now urging people to evacuate Tokyo, saying that he's showing substantial symptoms of high levels of radiation exposure to people there, especially children, and that he thinks people should get out of Tokyo. What is it, about 30 million people in Tokyo? You have, of course, been following the Fukushima accident. What is your opinion now, or your impression of what's going on there?
Well, Harvey, I hadn't heard that about this professor talking about the radiation levels in Tokyo, so I'll have to pay attention to that. But if anybody's paying attention, we all know that it's just an ongoing disaster. Even National Public Radio is continuing to cover Fukushima, so that says that there's some real problems. And most recently, they've had problems with leakage of this water that's in the storage tanks at the site. And to me, it seems like we just don't know the extent of the problem. But one thing is clear, it's ongoing. The effects are going to be quite lengthy for a long period of time. The more distant impacts are unknown, and people have to keep monitoring this very closely. There's a professor here at the University of South Carolina who is monitoring impact on animal life, including insects, and now they're doing a DNA study on cows inside the immediate zone around the plant. So we're just going to keep finding out bad things about the disaster and its ongoing impacts.
Well, Tom, you are now with the Sierra Club, is that correct? No, Frontier.
Well, I'm an advisor to the South Carolina chapter of the Sierra Club, but we're actually going to be forming a new group down here. Not ready to announce that yet, but for now I'm advising the Sierra Club because there's so many nuclear things going on here in the Southeast and South Carolina that it takes a lot of effort just to monitor the new developments.
And so is that your primary group? What group are you working primarily for right now?
Well, with the South Carolina chapter of the Sierra Club, but we will be making an announcement pretty soon about a new group that's forming here based in Columbia, but not quite ready to make that announcement yet because the website's not up and running, but I'll certainly let people know about that when it happens.
And you spent many, many years with Greenpeace and the nuclear campaign, both in the United States and abroad, is that correct?
Yeah, as you mentioned from the start, Harvey, we met through Greenpeace, I think, or perhaps before, over, 20 years ago, but I worked for Greenpeace for quite a while on international nuclear campaigns, and in that work I went to Japan quite a number of times, so I'm generally familiar with the nuclear reactor and reprocessing plutonium programs over there, but have traveled quite a bit internationally with Greenpeace, and have primarily been focused on U.S. issues here for the past, say, 6 years.
So tell us from South Carolina, the belly of the beast, what the major issues are now that you're focused on. You've got the Savannah River plant and the four reactors, the two in South Carolina and two in Georgia, that are under construction. And the big news, I guess, and most recently, is the final approval or apparent final approval, and you can give us more detail on this, Tom, of the loan guarantee program for the Vogtle plant and what else is happening with VC Summer in South Carolina. So if you can update us in detail, that would be terrific.
Well, a lot of people might not know what's going on in the Southeast or here in South Carolina, but we are, as I mentioned, kind of at nuclear ground zero. South Carolina has seven operating reactors, and there are only a couple other states with more nuclear reactors. And, of course, with more reactors, that means we have more nuclear waste than most states. But besides the seven operating, and I guess I could say there are probably 12 operating reactors within 150 miles of me in Columbia, South Carolina, including one about 25 miles north of the city. But in addition to those operating reactors, we have four reactors that are under construction within about 75 miles of Columbia, one which is the Vogtle site right across the Savannah River in Georgia, and there's two more planned by Duke Energy north of Columbia, but those have been delayed. So there's a lot of stuff going on here. Plus at Savannah River site, which is a big DOE complex, 300-square-mile complex where plutonium for nuclear weapons was made, there's an $8 billion plant being constructed, and the cost of that is going to go up to make plutonium fuel. So, Harvey, we got a little of everything down here, including a low-level nuclear waste dump that's leaking.
Well, Tom, we're going to take a short break in a minute. The $8 billion plutonium facility, what the hell are they going to do with the plutonium?
Well, this is a big government program that Senator Lindsey Graham has tried to push forward, and they want to make plutonium fuel to use in unknown reactors, though they're pushing reactors owned by the Tennessee Valley Authority. And the overall cost of that program, it appears to be around $30 billion. This is a big government program that's backed by the Republican senator. But it's going nowhere fast except running up cost and debt. So we can talk about more after the break if you want to.
All right, we will do that. We're talking with Tom Clemens, one of America's truly great long-term anti-nuclear activists. His half-life appears to be several hundred years. Tom,
oh,
we're going to take about a four-minute break, and we will be right back with you to talk more about nuclear power in the Southeast. This is a Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Thank you. Okay, we are back. This is Harvey Wasserman, the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We have three guests with us right now, but Nick is going to be with us for about 5-10 minutes. Nick Tabbitt, you are in California, and you're going to update us, please. And then we're going to be rejoined by Tom Clements of the Sierra Club in Columbia, South Carolina, and Sarah Barzak, another Southeastern nuclear activist. Not easy to be a nuclear activist or anti-nuclear activist in the United States. But Nick Tabbitt, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Harvey. How are you?
All right, Nick, I want to give you a good 5 minutes here to tell us what is the latest in the upcoming events around Fukushima.
Well, it's very exciting because we got about, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 more cities, you know, consulates ready to have actions. And so that's very interesting because it's one person doing the action in D.C. at the embassy. One woman, Regina Minnis, is going to go there with the letter and deliver it. We're hoping to get more people to join her, but she's, I think, very brave to take this on.
Okay, good. That's great. And you're going to post. Now, you have a website, which I have linked, at nukefree.org. You want to give us the website that people can go to find out where the actions are, please?
Yeah, yeah. It's Fukushima Third Anniversary Events.blogspot.
That's spelled out, Fukushima.
And third is spelled out, P-H-I-R-D.
Okay, but you can also go to nukefree.org, N-U-K-E-F-R-E-E.org, and look this up. So we've got one person now in Washington, D.C. I'm sure she won't be alone by the time the day comes. Where else?
Oh, I'm sure, yes.
Where else have you had people join in?
Well, Atlanta, they're going to do it, and they have two more actions on that same day. Aside from the consulate action, Seattle, it's now there's a group going to be there. Honolulu, we just heard today from someone who's pledging to do it. I don't know if that will be a one-person action as well, but basically we've got 11 cities fairly nailed down. It's still a little bit iffy on Detroit and a couple others, but it looks like 11, and we'll have another 6 to go, like Alaska, Anchorage, Alaska, Houston, Miami, Guam, territory of Guam, and Denver. And if there's anyone out there in those cities who wants to help us out, it's not that difficult. You know, you need to write a good letter to the editor. If you look at our website, it will tell you the protocol for the letter, and if you follow the protocol, they are required by law to accept it and to deliver it to the Prime Minister.
All
it takes, write the letter, deliver it on that day, and let us know about it, and we can tell the world and get some people to join you.
All right, so precisely, Nick Tabbitt, people are showing up at the Japanese consulate on March 11th, which is the third anniversary of the disaster, the beginning of the disaster at Fukushima. It's not over, unfortunately, and won't be over in our lifetimes or in our children's lifetimes, for that matter. But nonetheless, you are asking people to do what, where?
Well, we're asking people to go to the consulate on that day and to write a letter to the Prime Minister of Japan, a respectful letter, but demand certain things, such as letting international help into the disaster area, the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant, evacuating the families from the contaminated areas, and they're trying to do the opposite. They're trying to move people back in. They won't pay compensation for people to leave. We're asking them also to not restart all the reactors that were shut down. All of them are shut off now, and we don't want them started up again because many of them are in earthquake zones or tsunami zones, and they're not safe. We can't afford one more Fukushima. And
well,
there's more demands,
sure.
But also we have those letters older letters you can look at to get some ideas.
Now, do you also have is there a consulate in San Diego near the USS Ronald Reagan? Do you have a consulate and an action there?
In San Diego? I'm not sure, but I don't recall. Let me look up for 1 second, though. I know there's one action in San Diego. I don't know that there's a consulate there.
And you do have an action in San Diego?
Oh, yes, we do.
Okay. And I believe there may be things going on at the USS Ronald Reagan, which was irradiated very seriously by Fukushima.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Tom and Sarah Barczyk, are you still with us there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Nick, is there anything else you'd like to tell us before I turn things over and start talking American nukes with Tom Clemens and Sarah Barczyk?
Well, I'd just like to tell you we're very encouraged by this. The website is getting carried in many places, and people are finding out. And I just want to ask anyone out there who knows of any event not listed, please get in touch with me through that. It's info@FukushimaResponseBayArea.org. But if you go to the website, you'll see the link near the beginning. You'll see the email address near the beginning. Let me know what's going on in your neck of the woods, and I can put it up there. And the more people we can get out, the better.
All right, Nick Tabbitt, thank you so much. You can also access, if you can't remember that long, FukushimaThirdAnniversary.com, right? Is that it?
It's FukushimaThirdAnniversaryEvents.blogspot.com.
Oh, okay. That's a mouthful. You can also go to nukefree.org.
Yes.
www.nukefree.org and link through to Nick at that site. Nick Tabbitt, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, we'll be in touch with you. You call in next week again, and we'll keep doing this.
Yes, of course. Sorry about today. I called right on 2:00, and I got and then it got broken off. So,
well, we're good now. We're having we're doing well here, thanks to our crew in New York. So thank you so much, Nick.
Okay, thank you. Take care.
We'll talk to you next week. Okay, back with Tom Clemens of the Sierra Club in Columbia, South Carolina. Sarah Barczyk, you want to tell us a bit about yourself and your fantastic work for a green-powered Earth?
Thank you, Harvey, for having me here. I'm with Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. Is this echo coming across?
No, you're good.
Okay, great. Sorry about that.
Yeah, you didn't tell us you were calling from the Grand Canyon, but that's okay. So enjoy your time there and then keep talking.
Sure. My name is Sarah Barczyk. I'm the High Risk Energy Choices Program Director with the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. We're a 501c3 nonprofit membership organization based in the southeastern United States. And as many of your listeners, and you certainly know, Harvey, we work to promote responsible energy solutions that create global warming solutions and ensure clean, safe, and healthy communities throughout the Southeast. So with my little hat on as the high-risk energy choices coordinator, I work essentially to fight some of those energy options we have in the Southeast, primarily coal and nuclear, trying to clean those up and prevent new nuclear reactors from being built, while the organization also works to advance renewables such as solar and wind and energy efficiency, all of which are not really utilized very well by utilities in the southeastern United States. So we've got a big agenda, and we've been working on since the mid-'80s on these goals.
And Sarah, where are you based? Where are you talking to us from today?
I'm actually talking to you from Wisconsin today. I was in Savannah, Georgia for about a decade. We have offices across the southeastern United States and staff in a majority of the states, Tennessee, Knoxville, Asheville, several staff in Florida, Charleston, South Carolina, even folks in Louisiana and Alabama and Mississippi.
So you got a pretty big organization. All right, and you and Tom now, Tom Clemens, if you join in. Let's talk first about these loan guarantees that were put up by the federal government. Obama talked about $8.3 billion for new nukes when he first came into office, and now after all these years, $6.5 billion of it has gone through, apparently. Announced by Ernest Moniz, the money to go to build the utterly insane two reactors at Votel in Georgia. Tom, give us an update on this. Tell us what exactly is going on here.
Well, Harvey, let me defer to Sarah, because she's been tracking this more from the initial part of this. I mean, I'm up in it too, but her organization has been more intimately involved with the loan guarantee. So why don't we let her comment, and then I can jump in.
All right, Sarah, okay. Tell us about these loans.
Okay, thanks, Harvey. Essentially, last week, as you pointed out, a majority of this $8.3 billion loan guarantee was apparently finalized, and Secretary Moniz actually traveled to Plant Vogtle, which currently has two reactors. That's near Augusta, Georgia, and Waynesboro along the Savannah River. And there are several partners in the Vogtle project. The biggest one, the one folks most know about, is Georgia Power, which is the largest subsidiary of the utility giant Southern Company. One of their partners is Oglethorpe Power, and so the announcement last week at the site was that the two loan guarantee offers for those utilities have been finalized. There's still about $1.8 billion of that $8.3 billion total that hasn't been finalized, and that's for one of the third partners, MEAG, M-E-A-G, and that has a extended deadline through to the end of July to finalize that. Our organization, Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, has actually been trying to find out the details of this controversial loan guarantee since March of 2010. So over 4 years ago, we filed Freedom of Information Act requests with the Department of Energy, with the Office of Management and Budget, and the Department of Treasury, because these loan guarantees, I mean, $8.3 billion is a lot of money. And as you know, historically, the nuclear industry has defaulted on a lot of new reactor projects going all the way back to the 60s and 70s. And so our concern is if the project defaults, this is an approximately originally a $14.1 billion project that's now ballooned up to the neighborhood of about $15.6 billion. And if they default on this project, now that these two of the three loan guarantees supposedly are finalized, taxpayers are on the hook. And our concern going back 4 years ago is the Obama administration was supposed to and touted that they would operate in a very transparent, open manner with the public. And I can tell you we have now filed over 10 Freedom of Information Act requests trying to get at the nitty-gritty, not to get proprietary information, but just to get information as to what the risks are to taxpayers and have the agencies involved actually assess things like the Fukushima nuclear accident that you spoke about before. That changed things in the industry. The price of natural gas has fallen. The project itself, the Vogtle project, as I said, is over budget. It's actually 18 to 21 months delayed. So were those types of things taken into account as they came up with this deal for the utilities? And I can tell you, 4 years later, we still don't have the answers, because nearly every time we request something, what we get back, first of all, we don't get it back by law in the time frame the agencies are supposed to respond. And then when we do get it back, the documents are so heavily redacted as to be rendered useless, or they're so outdated that they're not helpful. So, you know, in our opinion, this is apparently what it takes to build new reactors in the United States, to keep the public out of the process, to offer real sweetheart deals to utilities such as Southern Company that has actually said they don't need the loan guarantee, and you know, all kinds of taxpayer handouts, either in the forms of loan guarantees or in the form of production tax credits and those types of things.
Well, that's pretty amazing. You know, how do I get one of these loans? I mean, I need a new car.
That's a good question, because I think everybody probably listening has tried to get a loan maybe over the last 4 years, and banks aren't really doling them out, and they're certainly not giving people sweetheart interest deals. But yet, as I said, one of the largest utilities in the country, Southern Company, has managed, from what we have been able to unearth, a very good sweetheart deal, getting a lower rate than they would be able to get if they went out into the marketplace. And that's not fair. And it's mainly not fair. The biggest gripe we have is taxpayers still don't know what risks they're taking on and whether anybody has been looking out for their own interests. and just finding for Secretary Moniz to go to Plant Vogel and have a big ceremony celebrating the fact that taxpayers were kept in the dark is completely unacceptable. And it's very unfortunate. And, you know, we filed a Freedom of Information Act request the day that happened, to demand, the deal terms and conditions for Oglethorpe Power and, Georgia Power. We'll see what happens. I won't hold my breath.
All right, you can hold your breath for the next 4 minutes. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, Tom Clements, I want to talk to you about Plant Vogtle, and then we're going to go deeper into small reactors, which are being pushed as an answer to climate change, which, I'd like you to tell us how we can buy the Brooklyn Bridge. So we're going to take a short break. We're on with Tom Clements and Sarah Barzac, two great activists in the nuclear field from the South. And after this short break, we'll be right back with you.
Coal plants, new plants, oil refineries, pipelines, mega dams. Iran, Iraq, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kurdistan. Oil spill, meltdown, flooding, suburbia, mudslide, traffic jam.
That's Dana Lyons, the fabulous Dana. Cows with Guns Lyons singing the Rocky Top version of the Solartopia song. This is Harvey Wasserman. Lots of forth for the Bears. We're back with two great activists, Tom Clements, talking to us from Columbia, South Carolina, and Sarah Barzac from Wisconsin. They're also in the southeastern part of the United States, but with the a great group of Southern activists. Tom Clements, Sarah filled us in on the new loan guarantees. I want to ask you, isn't it a bit preposterous that after 50 years with this technology that these fools still have to go to the taxpayer to get funding for their nuclear power reactors? And do they have insurance? A double question there. Tell us about what's really happening with the finances at the Vogtle project in Georgia.
Well, Harvey, one would think that the so-called fiscal conservatives in Congress would not allow these projects to get away with ripping off the taxpayer. But as Sarah just outlined, via these loan guarantees for the Vogtle project, the taxpayer is now assuming a lot of risk for what's going to happen with the project. But both here in South Carolina, because we have a parallel project at the VC Summer site, and at the Vogtle site in Georgia, there are laws that force the ratepayers to pay in advance for the projects. And we've already been hit with six rate increases to pay for the VC Summer project, which I said is the twin to Vogtle. We're going to be hit with another rate increase this year in Georgia. They're already paying about 4% or more of their bill to pay in advance for the project. So what the companies have gotten away with is to put all the cost and the risks on the back of the ratepayers, and to put cost or the risk of a loan, at least for the Vogtle project, on the back of the taxpayers. So my question is, where are the so-called fiscal conservatives? I mean, there aren't any. That they should be speaking up against this, up in arms. These projects, as your question implied, would not stand and would not have gone forward without these laws to specifically benefit new nuclear reactors. So the lesson for people in states that don't have these so-called construction work in progress laws is you can't let these things pass, which bill the ratepayers in advance, or you could be seeing something like we're seeing here in Georgia and South Carolina. It's those laws that are just totally biased. It's not the free market at all. But that's the only reason the projects are going forward. They wouldn't stand on their own. Then you ask about the insurance, and of course they're guaranteed by the taxpayer against the cost of nuclear accidents. And the design of this reactor, it's the Westinghouse AP1000, the four that are under construction here, it's an experimental design. Never been built anywhere in the world, although a similar one is being built in China to whatever regulations they may have over there. So if it gets to the point they're cranking them up, this is an experiment. We protested before the NRC and the public service commissions against these things being licensed, but they're going forward. But it's a technological experiment, and as Sarah Barzak knows, we've been tracking all the design changes and problems with the design, and I think there's some design problems that are lurking that are going to at least cause the cost to go up, the schedule to be delayed, which means more cost and risk to ratepayers and to the taxpayer.
So as at Fukushima, I do want to point out that Tokyo Electric Power, which had three reactors melt down, four explosions upcoming on the third anniversary, after decades, Tom, Sarah, I'm not going to guess your age, but Tom and I are older than dirt, and we've been hearing the nuclear power industry tell us for decades that a commercial reactor could not explode. And then when Chernobyl exploded, they said, well, that was just a Soviet reactor. It can't happen to good old American technology. And now, of course, three General Electric reactors have exploded at Fukushima. God knows when the next one's going to blow up. And if despite that happening at Fukushima, three meltdowns, four explosions, God knows what else, the Tokyo Electric Power Company showed a huge profit last year. I'm told in excess of $8 billion. And so it is, of course, not only possible but likely for a nuclear-powered utility to blow up its reactors and still come out of it, financially hugely profitable. And, in fact, the cleanup site at Fukushima has turned into a profit center. I assume, Sarah Barzak, that if there was a similar explosion, God forbid, at Votel or VC Summer, the nuclear utility would be insulated. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I think one of the phrases that I've heard used that most sort of epitomizes the nuclear industry right now, especially in the southeastern United States where we're seeing most of the new reactor proposals going forward, whether it's Vogtle or VC Summer or the pursuit of these small modular reactors, is socialize the risk, privatize the profit. And so in terms of accidents, I mean, certainly, there are a lot of lemons, unfortunately, out there. I think folks are aware of TVA's Browns Ferry reactors in Alabama that have had infamously known for problems they've had. And as Tom pointed out, the AP1000 design is new, never tested. And the concern certainly is what happens when they do start these reactors. You've got communities that are very vulnerable. In the example of Plant Vogtle, it's in a very rural area outside of Waynesboro, Georgia. The thought of evacuating folks and getting the word out to folks in time is highly unlikely. Price Anderson Act, which I'm not an expert on, but which is what all the nuclear utilities pay into. If there is a reactor accident, they all sort of pay in, but it's been known for decades that the amount, the cost there would far exceed what would be collected by Price Anderson. And so it, you look to, the fact that citizens, property owners, businesses will lose everything and look at Fukushima today. I mean, it's amazing to me. There are still tens of thousands of people that have never been able to go back home, that have lost their farmlands, that have lost the land that their families have lived on for generations. And that's Japan, where, I mean, as we know, land is is limited. It is an island. And yet somehow, regulators here and utilities here just somehow think it's not going to happen here. And we're obviously not prepared, when you just look at the insufficiency of the Price-Anderson Act. If there were to be an accident at any of the operating U.S. reactors today.
Sarah, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, good. Yes, I temporarily lost you there. But you're, well, it is astonishing to me, and I'm sure to many other people, that this continues. You've got four reactors in the southeast, you say, with designs that have never been tested? Is that possible, Tom Clemens?
Oh, yeah. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission didn't require a prototype model of this Westinghouse AP1000, as it's called, to be constructed. So they've already got the bottom of the containment put down for a couple of the units. So the experiment is going to be, if they get to the point of cranking them up, just to kind of see what happens. There will be some learning experience from China, but they're not going to be built to the U.S. standards. So the NRC basically let them off the hook as far as building a prototype or demonstrating a model or anything. So it's really rather astounding.
And now, you said are there one or more reactors of this Westinghouse design in the AP1000 design in China?
Yes, there are several under construction right now, and they are further along, but they're like the Chinese AP1000, and it's been very difficult to find out exactly what the regulations are, what the information is from those that it's being transferred back to Westinghouse. They're kind of the guinea pig, and I guess it's good that they're learning something from them, but that's where the real risk is going to be with when they crank those reactors up, if they get to that point. In maybe 2016, the first one might go online.
Well, that is really terrifying. We're talking with Tom Clemens and Sarah Barzak, nuclear experts. We've just ascertained that four reactors are under construction in the southeast of the United States, two in South Carolina, two in Georgia, are being built to designs about which we know nothing. That's really very, very encouraging. After 50 years of experimentation with the nuclear power industry, they want to do more. Let's move into another area of experimental reactors, small modular reactors. Now, these people who are running around claiming that small modular reactors, a new generation, will be the answer to global warming, I have just seen, and I believe I posted it at nukefree.org, an article about a lot of the potential radioactive problems with small modular reactors. Tom, can you update us on what's happening with these so-called SMRs and what the prospects are, and then we'll segue into Sarah on this.
Well, I think it's almost humorous what's going on, in a dark way. We talked about some of the problems with these big new reactors, and it's as if the industry itself is recognizing that these giant reactors that are under construction, and there are a couple more in Tennessee that are of a different design one more that's being finished, that the industry sees their problems. So they have proposed using smaller reactors, which are up to like 300 megawatts. The big ones are over 1,000 megawatts. And on a call with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission yesterday, it looks like they're expecting licensing requests from four models, but the problem is, one of the problems besides the design is, they don't have any money to build these things. One of the companies put out a plea, Babcock and Wilcox, to get funding for its design. It wants to build the reactor or reactors near the Oak Ridge site in Tennessee. They don't have any money. Two of the models. That Babcock and Wilcox one and another one do have federal government support, but I don't think the federal government is going to pay for construction. They don't have any backers. We've read that they might have to build 100 of these to have an economy of scale to make them profitable. It's just not there. And the designs don't exist. They're all on paper. So there's a lot of problems with this concept. And one thing that I find quite frightening, Harvey, is that I have heard one of the small modular reactor vendors say that they want the emergency planning zone to be inside the plant boundary. And that plant size was 45 acres for the Empower Babcock and Wilcox design. So basically, you know, it's 1,000 feet around the reactors that would be the emergency zone. So if you live close to one of these, and they're talking about putting them on old coal plant sites, they could be located pretty close to communities. And they're still very large reactors. They probably produce more nuclear waste per kilowatt hour than the large reactors. They could still melt down and have all the other problems. So it's really kind of a crazy approach, but I don't really see them going anywhere. But we can predict that they're going to try to get as much federal money as they possibly can as this whole process moves along.
Well, I'm of the opinion that the entire nuclear power industry is just a scam to get federal money. I don't believe these reactors are ever going to exist, these SMRs. I do want to mention very quickly, just for old time's sake, that Babcock and Wilcox did build the Three Mile Island Unit 2, and Davis-Besse, where the boric acid ate almost all the way through the containment. So they have a thrilling track record, and I'm sure that they'll do just as good a job with the small modular reactors. Sarah, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, actually, I did. I mean, I wanted to highlight that, you know, several years ago, there were over 30 new reactors of the larger scale proposed in the country, and now it's really been whittled down. The nuclear renaissance has crumbled, and we've got the four reactors under construction at Vogtle, NBC Summer in Georgia and South Carolina, and then Florida Power and Light down in Florida still trying to pursue two reactors at Turkey Point, but it's unlikely those will ever move forward. But the SMRs, the small modular reactors, are very troubling for us, especially in the Southeast. As Tom pointed out, Tennessee Valley Authority is looking at building four of these SMRs, potentially at the old Clinch River site near Oak Ridge National Labs. That is where breeder reactors were proposed quite a long time ago. And in the Southeast, and nationwide, but particularly in the Southeast, we're seeing a lot of big old dirty coal units finally shut down and retire, which is a great thing, and that's a step in the right direction for reducing carbon emissions. What we're seeing the nuclear industry do is sort of leverage their way into filling that gap as coal units go down in retiring, and saying, hey, we're the clean energy answer here, instead of what is really viable, which are renewable options, including wind, both land and offshore, different types of solar technologies, photovoltaics and others. And especially in the Southeast, we are not an energy efficient region. We typically use more kilowatt hours than other states, and we don't squeeze every ounce out of that kilowatt hour. And so it's a troubling prospect, because it's the industry trying to find another way in to feed at the trough that's often funded by taxpayers. That's probably in part why they've gone after Tennessee Valley Authority, because it's sort of a quasi-government entity versus a private utility like Southern Company or Duke Energy. And so, you know, the small modular reactors, though I think it's far-fetched, it's likely not going to happen. It's wasting valuable time and limited financial resources in dealing with climate change and trying to reduce carbon emissions in a safe manner that's sustainable for communities. So I think it's just really important to nip this bad plan in the bud and try to get small modular reactors out of lawmakers and decision makers' eyes, and just you know, squelch this and just say renewables and efficiency are the way of the future, and the nuclear industry needs to step aside, you know, slowly close their nuclear plants and certainly don't invest in more nuclear.
Well, speaking of the bud, you mentioned nipping things in the bud. The Congress has, both the House and the Senate, each have bills in front of them to finally legalize hemp as an industrial product. In the 8 minutes we have left, let's talk about solutions that are coming around in the Southeast, the growth of the Solartopian green power movement. Do we see significant progress in your region here where these nuclear plants are being promoted to get us off of this nuclear madness and into a land of renewable energy? Are you guys seeing any significant progress down there?
Harvey, you're asking me?
Either way,
let me let Sarah do that. Her organization has done a great job on promoting alternatives and conservation and efficiency in South Carolina and other states as well. So why don't you take that, Sarah?
Sure. Definitely progress has been made, and that is what's important. Solar installations, whether they're photovoltaics or new wind, is coming online, obviously, more quickly than new reactors are, and in greater numbers, both nationally and globally. And we've had success stories in the Southeast. Unfortunately, what we're dealing with a lot in the Southeast, and this is, as I said, I'm the one stuck fighting the dirty energy options. I don't get to work on the fun stuff, as I say, which is the clean energy options. But one of the barriers in place in many areas of the Southeast is that there are laws on the books that really prevent and stifle renewables. For instance, a lot of restrictions on solar. And so there's a lot of work going on at the state level, Georgia, Florida, the Carolinas, to look at the policies that are sort of protecting the big utilities, such as Southern Company and Duke, from doing the right thing so you can get third-party interest and help people, whether they're small businesses or homeowners or school systems or even the military, advance clean renewables. So those types of things have to happen first, and then you see more, you know, taking place. But there's a lot of excitement. South Carolina has a lot of really interesting offshore wind development going on and studies there, so that would be great for that region of the country. I know in Georgia there is a lot of sunshine in Georgia, and certainly down in Florida in the Sunshine State, and people have gotten so upset, particularly in Florida, with the nuclear debacles that have gone on with the new reactors that have sort of dried up but spent their money because they also have construction work in progress bills, that there's more emphasis and enthusiasm now about solar and sort of getting out of this big, giant utility controlling your energy future and your electric bills, and that's really exciting. So I actually think, in a way, the nuclear industry's ineptitude is helping drive not only the public, but even some lawmakers over to the solar side of things and clean energy side of things.
I really want to concur with that, because that's some of the good news here, the whole debacle with the new reactors, how much they're costing, that a decision to build them was made before there was any discussion about conservation and efficiency and alternatives. I think we're shifting the conversation here in the South because of the nuclear project. So there's some rays of hope, as Sarah points out, that the downside of the nuclear reactor construction is right in front of us, but also we're comparing it to alternatives and possibilities, and I think that there's some positive things that we're reaping from the nuclear debacle.
Well, and you guys have been right at the forefront, Tom Clemens and Sarah Barzak. We've just got 2 minutes left. Can you quickly, each of you, give us a website where people can plug into the great work you do and really help lend a hand here?
Sure, I'd love to do that. Our website's pretty easy to remember. It's cleanenergy, all one word, .org. And you can learn about everything that we're doing from the local up to the federal level, in promoting clean energy in the Southeast and clean technologies. And then we also have a blog, which I know Harvey has done a great job getting the word out. It's our Footprints blog on the path to clean energy, and that's at blog.cleanenergy.org. We have some great recent blog posts on some of the nuclear debacles going on in Florida, the Vogtle loan guarantee.
And Tom Clemens, thank you, Sarah. Tom, you got one real quick?
Well, people can look at the South Carolina chapter of the Sierra Club, but I would plug Fairwinds Energy Education, FAIREWINDS.org, and stay tuned for an announcement about a new group tracking all this stuff here in South Carolina.
Fantastic. Two great guests. Thank you so much for your fantastic work, Tom Clemens, Sarah Barzak. We will be back next week with the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show, and we are honored to have had the both of you with us. We'll talk to you again in Solartopia.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Harvey.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world.
Well, we multiplied, we needed more. The rich got rich. The fuel ran scarce.